Welcome to Help from Future Self.
Hello, Archons. Welcome to Help from Future Self, the conversational KeyForge podcast by and for KeyForge friends. I'm your host, Sydney, and I'm joined this week by super, super awesome Vault Tour players. I have both June. Hey, June, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. Hi.
And we also today have Vargast, otherwise known as Matt, for those of you who want to call him by his real name. Vargast is the winner of both Sealed and Alliance at the first 2024 Vault Tour this year. Hey, Matt, how you doing?
Hey, Sydney. Hey, June, doing great. How are you guys?
Oh my gosh, so awesome. Okay. So excited you're here. We have so much to talk about. But before we get into that, so the game found for Amber Skies launched since we last recorded an episode. And there's so much information. We can't really get into all of it right now in just like a little teensy tiny news section. So I'm just gonna real quick, I'm gonna take you listeners on a quick journey, and then we can hop into the more important things talking to Vargast here. So the game found opened at 10 a.m. on Thursday, on 10 a.m. Central Time on Thursday. And I was sitting at my computer. I had my Discords open, talking to people, like really excited and really ready. I was going for the premium pledge, the one where you get your face, your likeness in the game. And everyone knew I was super, super interested in getting this level pledge because I was so upset, not so upset, but I was upset that I didn't get it last time. And so we're sitting on this Discord chatting, and then 10 o'clock comes around. I hit my refresh button. And the only pledge level available was the Reaper of Amber. And I was, not only was I like clicking refresh like a crazy person, but I was also like, I was in the Discord and Josh was like there messaging with us. Like he was in every Discord as it opened. And people were messaging him on our Discord, on the Archons Corner Discord, like, what's going on? No, it's not there. And so 5 minutes in, like I'm hitting refresh like crazy. Like I don't stop. And 5 minutes in, 10:05. It shows up. All of them show up. So like from the novice of the Crucible, Seeker of Dex, Breaker of Chains, like all of them show up at 10:05. And I like click into the premium and I'm like, this is a race now. Because last time I tried to get this, there were options. There were drop downs. And I had to pick like which art I wanted on my mat and like blah, blah, blah. And this time I was like, I don't care. I'll fix it in the pledge manager later. I'm clicking through this. And so there was a drop down next to deck box. And I just picked the default option, like the first one. And I'm clicking through and I'm like filling out my information. And I made sure before it even opened that my credit card was in there. And I go to the bottom and I hit enter and I hit continue. And it says, you need to pick your country. And I'm like, no. Okay. So I scroll back up. I find where it has the country section. I do United States and I click back down and I go really fast. And while my page is processing, I'm like, I have Discord on my other screen. I have multiple screens up for this at the moment. And so on my other screen, on Discord, Sunday posts in our Discord that they all sold out. Like the premium pledges are gone. It was literally 10:07. It was 2 minutes. And I'm like, please, please go through. And it did. And I am going to have my face in the game.
Yes. Now the face of KeyForge is going to have her face in KeyForge. So
that's right.
Oh my God. It was the most exciting Thursday I've ever had.
Did you refresh your page or did you just let it load out and eventually it went through?
Yeah, eventually it went through. It went through and like I was afraid to hit refresh because I didn't want it to restart my attempt.
Yeah.
And so I let it go through and I was like on edge the whole time. And then it was so, so sweet because I posted in the Help from Future Self Discord that I got it. And there were some people that were like, I literally logged on just to see if you got it.
Yeah, I thought about trying to get one just to give it to you if you didn't get one, you know. Aww. I was actually driving to a client meeting at that exact time and I forgot to check and I actually checked right at 10:05 and it said there were 7 left. I'm like, wow, maybe these things aren't going as fast as they did before.
not realizing
it didn't go up until 10:05. So I literally like logged on at the right time if I wanted to do it.
Wow. So 3 people got it literally in the same minute it went up. Isn't that insane?
I'm glad you got it though.
Oh my gosh, thank you.
Pretty nerve-wracking. I saw you. Yeah, I was going back through the chats and I saw you were messaging people while it was going on. I'm like, I don't know if I'd be doing that if I were you.
Well, yes, there's a reason I had multiple screens up. And I'm glad I did, because I was also looking in other, I was opening other tabs to see like if there was information available. But in our Discord, Orbital Tangent, Josh, like once it was available, he was posting in the different Discords saying, oh, they're up now, because he wanted people to know that not just the premium one, but all of them had shown up.
Well, there are two highlights I want to bring up. One of which is that now your custom playmats, which are normally just customized to your custom name decks, you can opt to have them named after existing decks that you own. So I will finally have my Becky playmat.
Yay!
That's really exciting. Yeah, that was definitely my favorite thing. I know a lot of
people that are really excited about that. People who are generally not excited about playmats. So
there's a retailer exclusive set called More Mutation that's a take on Mass Mutation, because it's a reprinting of Mass Mutation, but with a couple different changes. They're going to have a Gigantic for every house, which is honestly something I wanted from the original.
No. Sydney, two Gigantics for every house.
Isn't that insane?
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
That's so awesome. And then on top of that, they're going to have new Legacy cards, because there's been Keyforge sets published since Mass Mutation. So I'm really excited for this retailer set, because like you mentioned, people that weren't interested because of this one thing that they're offering, they are interested. All of the people at my local were not going to pledge because they wanted to support our local. And as much as we want to support our local, this is how we're going to do it: by getting them to get a retailer pledge, by pledging for this GameFound campaign, and then voting for them as our home base so that they get the opportunity to get these decks. So yeah,
basically, the more locals pledge, the more benefits your store gets.
Absolutely. So that is exciting, and I absolutely love the way that they integrated retailers into this, so that it's not just them taking money away from brick and mortar stores, it's them directly benefiting brick and mortar stores. So I couldn't be more excited.
Do you guys have just one local store that you're trying to become a home base? I'm just curious, because we have three different stores in Kansas City, so we're strategically trying to decide like who backs and how much, and then who votes for which stores. So just curious what you guys' take is on all that.
Up in Albany, we have one store, Zombie Planet, and George, who has like stuck with us the most through COVID and everything, and supports us and communicates with us when something happens, like our prize kits don't come in time. And he's very sweet. And so we're absolutely, we're all rallying for George.
That's awesome.
That's amazing. Yeah, we have multiple stores right over the border, and a really, really robust Wisconsin community in both Madison and Milwaukee. But then we also, in Chicago, we have kind of like a good community, but we also have so many stores, like each of the people are willing to travel into the city or like an hour's driving distance. So we have a good like 12 to 15 people. But to rally around one store has been really hard for us. Yeah. So like if we can't decide on one store, unfortunately, I'm going to be putting my home base behind the one in Wisconsin that I go to on Tuesdays. Like my literal local is an hour away, but it's also my weekly store. But if we can get an Illinois, a Chicago-based store for all of us 15 people to rally around, then we think the benefits will outweigh the detraction from it not being something that we currently go to weekly.
Right.
Yeah. I think a lot of people are like very excited for locals with this. Even like I'm excited for our locals who aren't necessarily invested in something like a GameFound, because they're still going to get to experience more mutations, which is really, not all of them have even experienced Mass Mutations.
Right?
Personally, I'm super excited. I think this is like a really cool only KeyForge kind of idea. And I'm really excited to open up Becky, but with the Shadows, a gigantic creature. That's the idea. That's my plan.
Yeah, Mass Mutations, most of our favorites in Kansas City. That was kind of the set that a lot of us really gravitated towards, being the first set with all the bonus pips and stuff. It was always just exciting to open. So I think that'll hopefully draw more crowds back out when the time comes.
And you know what? Mass Mutation is a big draw for a lot of Alliance players, because the pips, if the way that pips can fall in houses, it just makes it so appealing to go for a pod that has received the benefit of a lot of pips from other houses.
Right. Yeah. Did they say that? Did Gigi say that? I think it won't be compatible for Alliance. It'll be its own set. Is that right?
Correct. The more mutations will not be compatible with mass mutations, but it will be compatible within itself. So I know that that makes it a lot more of a limited pool to pull from. But I am still really excited to, like, we could still have like quadruple gigantic like Alliance decks.
Or sextuple.
Sextuple. Love it.
There's one more detail from the game found I find really interesting, which is that the collector set of all Ember Skies cards is 309 cards, which is lower than, I think, any other set, maybe equivalent to Coda. So I'm really interested to see what that does, what decks look like. It might be like much easier to find like the cool stuff, but I think all that remains to be seen. I just thought it was like a really interesting little tidbit.
I wouldn't have even thought of that. Like, that is a fantastic catch.
Yeah, I've seen some chatter about it, and I think people are asking the question to figure out why it's, you know, I think, what, 50 cards or so less than other sets? I think a lot of sets are near 400 or 370 to 400, so.
Wow. And it has a whole new house, too. So usually when a set has a whole new house, like, that is 100% new card, so you'd think there'd be a lot more of it.
Yeah, I guess everything besides Geistoid has been around for a fair amount of time, so I don't, maybe they're reprinting a lot from the other, I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
Hey, I am not against most of my Logos babies coming back from all of my other favorite sets. Like, this is so exciting.
Yeah, I'm overall really excited for the houses as a whole. You know, I think we all like Mars quite a bit, and I've always been a big Mars fan. Logos being back is good. Brobnar's finally playable and good, so along with all the new houses. So yeah, it should be a fun set.
I'm always excited to see what new jank Equidon is going to bring to the set. It's always really weird, and I like it a lot. Even if it's not a good house, it'll be interesting to see.
Well, you know what? There's always, every house can have like a good selection of cards. You can always somehow land the best cards from that house, even if the rest of it is like, and to be honest, to each their own, because I have become such a big fan of Tutorbin Rylo, and like, people can hate on that as much as they want, but it is so fantastic in the right moment.
You guys are crazy. You're crazy.
Oh yeah, I am crazy. It's from
I heard you guys say that a while back. I'm like, what is going on here? Maybe I haven't played with it enough, but I kind of actively avoid decks and pods with it. So
just get three or four of them. You'll learn to love them.
Sure. Yeah. I guess we'll find out.
Well, you didn't have to find out. At Roseville, you ended up walking away with two Vault Tour titles, but I'm spoiling the ending here. Why don't we go ahead and just let you start with the sealed vault, because that is how our Friday started. So we've already told our stories. You are sitting there and you are looking at your decks, your three decks. What is your thought process? What do you see?
Sure. Yeah, just, I guess starting that day, I drove up with a good friend, Miggy from Kansas City, the two of us, and we both got up at 4 a.m. to drive up. So
seriously?
We were pretty tired by the time we got there already. And I thought it was actually starting at noon, and then it didn't actually start till 2. So I'm like, man, we could have slept in two more hours. So we were just kind of sitting around. We opened a couple Vaultmaster 24 decks and enjoyed that. But once we finally got to open our sealed decks, first impressions honestly weren't super great. None of the decks as a whole were very good, but luckily, I think, like you, Sydney, one pod from each deck kind of stood out for various reasons, and I can kind of just kind of give an overview of what those were. So my deck ended up being Brobnar, Geistoid, and Unfathomable. The Brobnar had some pretty cool tricks in it. It had a couple shock herders. One had an amber pip on it. Nice. And then a lot of creatures with splash damage. So two Thunderdells, a Heavyweight Morric, a Crim Torchtooth. And that's all the creatures. So they're either shock herders or they're big, beefy guys with splash damage. Along with Iron Obelisk and Soul Bomb. So there's a lot of ways to get my own creatures damaged to kind of bump up the key costs. And it also had a Memorialize the Fallen in Brobnar. So overall, it was, I'd say it's probably the strongest house and kind of what the deck revolved around the most. That's kind of the house I wanted to keep going back to.
Nice.
my Geistoid had two Winds of Death, which is obviously pretty good. It can be, but obviously in this within its own set, it can be detrimental at times too, depending on what you go up against. And I didn't really have any of the Might Makes Right or the Key Abductions or any of that, the key cheats to go along with it. So, but I did have a Boo and a Hallowed Eve Festival in here somewhere. So I had a few ways to kind of mill through the deck somewhat quickly and pull off a Winds of Death.
That sounds like a dream pod, like outside of sealed. Like I would really like to see that pod in a normal deck I opened, let alone in a competition.
Yeah, those are the main pieces. And it also had Animating Force, which is some artifact control and something I don't always have the luxury of playing with. So, yeah, overall, the creatures are kind of meh, which they somewhat are in Geistoid. But when you get the good action cards and upgrades, I think it's a pretty good house. So that was the Geistoid. And my last house was Unfathomable. And honestly, when I was looking at them the first time, this is the one that stood out the most just because I like what's in it. And the reason why is there's two Dragnets and a Tendrils from Below. And I've always just been a huge fan of bouncing creatures back to hand with Lights Out or Nature's Call, just to kind of slow down your opponent's momentum and clog up their hand a bit. So
totally,
I knew that was going to be pretty fun to play with. And then
also in sealed in general, creatures are like a big thing. Like normally sealed events like lean more heavily toward creatures because that's like definitely guaranteed reaping and something that if you don't have the options of good synergies, then creatures are also good board control if you're lacking that. So something like Dragnet, especially if people have to stick with bad creatures, is a fantastic addition to your deck.
Yeah. So that was really exciting when I opened. That was probably my favorite of the pods at first glance. It also had a Nightmare Inducer, which I've really come to love that card, where you can action and exhaust or pick a card from your opponent's discard and then exhaust all the creatures of that house and put it on the bottom of their deck. So I'll get into that maybe when I talk about, I think it was your game where I tried to do something kind of fun with that. But it had that, and then it also had Weak Link and Under Pressure, and which I actually pulled off a couple times where it could make my opponent's keys plus six and kind of permanently exhaust a creature. So those were kind of the highlights, but overall, I think I never scanned the decks until like a week after I got home even.
Seriously?
I didn't want to know, I guess. I don't know for whatever reason, but like I thought, I think there was 72, 75, and 76. So they're
amazing.
They're all pretty mid for the set. But then when I built the Alliance, it was 90 Saf. So I think I definitely the upgrade there.
It's funny because
I've heard the discussions and stuff about, you know, I think Alliance, like Sealed Alliance, maybe widening the gap. But in my case, I think it helped me kind of catch up to some of the people that were playing just a single Archon deck that was already in the 90 SAS range. So,
yeah, for sure. Like, I know some people like scanned theirs immediately. And I knew some people went in hoping to be able to use DOK so that they could, in fact, make SAS a factor. But the fact that you didn't scan it in until like even after you came home, like I'm super curious when we get to like your like top eight day two experience, like what that was like for you at that point. But we'll get there. We'll get there. Sure. I don't want to jump the gun.
One of the really cool things about sealed is that you're allowed to swap your pods out between rounds. I'm not sure if is that still true in the top eight or is it just during?
Oh, I don't know why not.
I think you can at any point. I actually debated on it. Sydney, I'll talk about that when we get to our top eight match.
Ooh, I'm so excited.
That was the only time I knew a little bit about your deck from just discussions with people and hearing things. And but we can talk more when we get to that match. But yeah, you can swap at any point, which is kind of exciting. And I'm a big advocate for Sealed Alliance. I just think it's fun and, you know, fairly beginner friendly. It's not that many decisions you have to make. So
I also think the skill level, like winning a sealed event takes such a different skill set. But I think adding Alliance to that criteria makes it an even higher skill set because you can, in fact, swap things out. So if you need to decide something isn't working or you need to like make that alliance different for whatever reason, like you get to do that. So the fact that that's an option every step of the way makes you continuously using your brain between games as well as while you're playing.
Exactly.
But yeah, so how's you jump right in, you have your first game, how'd that go?
First game was against Toaster Fire. He's from Baltimore area. We talked during the match, and he's really excited for the upcoming Vault Tour there because it's at his local store. So
cool.
I think you're going Sydney. June, are you going to that one too? Baltimore,
yeah. And Rochester
swapped. Awesome. So unfortunately, I won't be there.
Oh,
but
I said you were going to all of them.
No. Unfortunately, I'm not able to go to Baltimore or Rochester. And Baltimore, unfortunately, so the Sunday of Baltimore is Father's Day, and for a large portion of the KeyForge community, that gives them a reason to be able to go, or it helps them be able to go. But I am in the position where that is the opposite. I have a fantastic weekend planned for my husband. So.
Well, don't worry. June will take that one down too.
Exactly. So. Right. She's going to be there. So why should I even have hopes of doing well? Like, come on.
Yeah. But getting back to it, I played Toaster Fire. I hadn't met him before. It was nice to kind of get to know him a bit and kind of get settled in. He was joking that he was ready to go 0-2 and get to second amper. So I was like, I don't know. We'll see if that happens or not. But it was a relatively close match for the most part. The kind of pivotal moment in that one was I was able to forge my second key, and I think he was at check at 8 or 9 for his second key, and I was able to time the memorialize the fallen right after I forged and wiped out all his amber. So that pretty much sealed it. I had to play it out from there. But
oh, that feels so good too, because your Brobnar pod specifically doesn't have a lot of creatures, and so it's a really, really good way to like start off your journey in sealed.
Yeah, I feel like the things kind of came out at the right time on that one. So yeah, that felt pretty good. So second round, I went up against Sundy. And that was the first of eventually 4 matches that I played with him over the weekend, which was
Gosh.
So that game, it was very interesting. It ended up being my one loss for the day, for that event. And it was crazy because I thought I was doing everything right during the game. And he kept playing Belligerent Guards. He had 2 of them. And then the 6 power creature that if it's destroyed on not your turn, you get 2. I forget the name of
Sycnictarian or something.
Yeah, so he had those, and I didn't want to kill that, obviously, to give him 2 amber, and the Belligerent Guards kept giving me a draw. So I kept bouncing those with the Dragnets, and he kept giving me like 8 or 9 card hands. But unfortunately, like for whatever reason, it was like I kept having 3-3-3 hands. I'm like, what the heck is going on? So I couldn't get like anything going, and I had Animating Force in my hand like probably half the game. I was holding it like every deck has an artifact, right? Like I was just like anticipating something good coming out. Eventually, I got sick of holding onto it. I scrapped it for an amber, and the next turn he drops Beanstalk and just goes haywire on me. I'm like, okay, this is not my match. Yeah, during it, I'm like, I think it ended up being, 3-1, but I'm like, I think I could keep this a lot closer if I didn't get, you know, sloppy hands and let him utilize the Beanstalk as much.
Yeah, and also like for sealed, you don't know.
Yeah.
Like it is such a hard decision whether you're going to hold a card, you know?
Yeah.
Especially round 2. You don't know anything.
Yeah, exactly. So
it's interesting that the Belligerent Guards didn't have a downside. A lot like Tutor Benrillo is just kind of always good, right?
no downside there either, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It was strange. He kept getting use out of him, obviously, but he had to keep going back to that house. So he was kind of making slow progress. But no, it was fun getting to meet him in person because we had exchanged some decks late last year and stuff.
Cool.
So it was nice putting a face to the name and getting to enjoy 4 games against him. So that was my one loss. I was feeling a bit down after that. I'm just like, and I felt pretty good about my deck after like the first game, and it just didn't really come together the second game nearly as well, but I was still alive at least. So the third game, that's one game that I don't recall too much from, although I remember it, I think I was playing from behind most of the game and it almost went to time, and eventually I was able to pull it out, but I felt like I was, you know, almost knocked out at that point in time, which after everything that happened after that, it would have been, you know, kind of sad to go out at 1-2. So
totally. Yeah. Like, it makes sense, though, that, like, after a loss, your brain is like, all right, I'm in a different place right now. And it didn't, like, hold any of those memories.
Yeah. Yep. So then my fourth game of the day was against Ben the Monkey.
Oh,
and it was Yeah, he, I know he's one of your locals, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And we've talked, you know, at previous vaults and KFCs and stuff like that. So it was nice getting to sit down with him. At that point, we weren't sure if it was a playing in or what was going to happen.
Oh, good point.
It ended up being my last game of the day, I believe. So it was a pretty unforgettable game because probably turn 4 or 5, I booed him, I think, to the end of his deck first, and then he booed me.
Oh, interesting.
And he saw both of my Winds of Death in my discard. He got both of mine, but I was thinking he might have one as well. So we basically were playing a game of chicken where I wanted to see what he would do first, you know, to see if he had it, or I didn't want to flip my deck and then let him archive every creature in his discard pile. And just kind of by the look on his face, I realized that he had it, and we kind of just sat there like, what do we do now? So I took like one or two, like really slow, like I'm just going to reap twice and pass. You know, I'm not going to do anything. He didn't have Equidon, I don't think, so he couldn't like make me draw a card with Tutor Benrilo or something, which that would have been a good time to have one, I guess. But
it's so strong.
Yeah, so eventually he did choose to play the Winds of Death. I think we both went through the discard piles, and he had probably 4 or 5 more creatures than me, but I think by giving me the advantage of pulling it first if I want to, it ended up playing in my favor a bit. The game ended up going pretty long nearing time, but I think at that point he saw that I was going to pull it out, and he actually just scooped up, which was nice, so we didn't have to play out the stressful
time and stuff. Sure.
So I appreciated that, and yeah, he was a good sport about it, but
Many comments on that. Like, first of all, but like the high brain level, like you might find out how like not amazing a player I am by like some of the facts that like you two booing each other, like the number of times I use boo on my opponents is so low. It's ridiculous. Like I want to be haunted, or I want things in my discard pile to pull from, like the choosing to boo your opponent so that they flip faster is like incredibly great forethought, especially the other point in sealed when you don't know what they have. Like the fact
that you get to see it. Yeah.
Yeah. When you were playing you were guessing, you were assuming that he had Winds of Death. Even the fact that like you played a couple of turns slow and then decided to stay haunted, like that is the level of skill that a sealed player needs to win a vault tour. Like the fact that you didn't just play your best turn for that moment, you played for the best turn based on what your opponent might have, like that's just incredible.
Thanks, Sydney. Yeah, it felt pretty good at the time. I don't know what I was going to do if he decided not to do it. You know, I was kind of dread. I'm like, eventually I'm going to have to do something else other than what I'm doing. So, you know, theoretically he could have kept going longer with whatever he had on board and things like that. But I'm obviously happy how it turned out for me, but it was.
Do you think that with the deck you were playing, having your creatures, because if your whole discard pile is the creatures are removed, do you think your actions or your non-creature cards were on a whole better than his non-creature cards? Like, might you have chosen to leave your creatures in your archives just to play your actions?
I think I did, actually. That one wasn't streamed, unfortunately, but yeah, that's actually something that I'll touch on with my Archon deck, where I do have Winds of Death as well. But I feel like a lot of people pull things quickly, and I like to let it sit there until like I absolutely need it, or you know, because otherwise, like if it's a bunch of houses, you're not going to be drawing new cards for a while. And
right.
You know, I like to get other things going as well. So yeah, it's a tough call when to pull it, but yeah.
That's how I feel about like Mass Mutations Archive too. It can feel tempting to just pull your pull cards or pull a couple creatures of the same house, but letting it pile up or like thinning out your deck can be even more valuable.
Yeah. So aside from all the combos with Winds of Death, yeah, I think that's kind of another use for it that can really benefit you. So yeah, that was the fourth round. I was 3-1, and luckily that was enough, I think, to get me to the top 8, unless I'm forgetting a match. But so there was talk that we were gonna do the top 8 that night on Friday night, which I was like, please just let me go to bed on a high and like no, I'm in a top 8. Like I wasn't expecting to do well necessarily in the other ones, so I didn't want to go out on a loss. We would have had to play that night, Sydney. So
Oh, that's right. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh, that's crazy.
Sunday instead. So yeah, do you want me to go into the rest of that tournament, finish that one off, or do you want to go chronological?
Let's
keep talking sealed.
Right? Yeah, let's do it.
Well, that takes us to us. So yeah. It's me and you. It was me and you.
I guess I'll start by. Oh, did you review Sid's game that I streamed? Did you watch it?
No, I thought about it. I'm like, this is wrong. I just felt wrong. I'm like, I'm not going to do that. And Sydney, you were like, at one point, you were ready to like tell me all about your deck, and I think I stopped you.
Yes, you did.
I'm like, in case we play, like, I don't want to know everything about it. So
I was so excited because I also did not expect to make top eight, and so like I was very very like proud of myself, I guess, and yeah. So I was willing to throw away any chance I had at winning the thing.
No, so I didn't do any scouting in that sense, although I had heard that you had like triple target and, right. And beanstalk was basically what I knew. So I knew going in that.
Yeah. And you had mentioned that your only loss was to Sunday with the beanstalk.
With the beanstalk. Yeah.
Right. And so yeah. I was like, okay, so I have a chance. Like,
yeah, I wasn't happy to go against beanstalk again. So we talked about swapping out pods. Just the thought of beanstalk alone made me consider taking out my Unfathomable, which was what I think maybe one of the best pods that I had with all the bouncing. But against Beanstalk, it's not that great because they're just going to come back in ready. Oh,
good point. And my whole Brobnar, like I maybe had, so I had Beanstalk and then maybe like three actions. The rest of it were creatures. So yeah. That's what made my Beanstalk pod so great. And so, yeah, good point.
Yes. So my other pods weren't great, but I did have a Star Alliance with two Unprepared, which stunning all of them, I thought, you know, could be a better option to let them stay out there for longer and then kind of Winds of Death after you maybe unexhaust them or something. So I debated on that, but just the pod as a whole, that was pretty much all that I had going for it. So I stuck with what I had done previously. And I guess on my end, I think, Sydney, you got Beanstalk out.
Yes, I got it out real early. Yeah.
Turn one, which was pretty frightening. And I was able to kind of hold you off. I don't think you were able to get too many Brobnar creatures out. And
right.
I think I was able to time my Winds of Death pretty well. But
yep.
It came down to the wire, I know. And we got right to time, I think. And I guess we were talking about Nightmare Inducer earlier. You had two trawlers. And I knew I was going to Winds of Death at some point. So I was kept using the Nightmare Inducer to put them on the bottom of your deck.
Right.
So that when I wins, you wouldn't get them back.
And but, so that when I was at the end of my deck and I had my trawler, you have to be haunted. And
yes.
So I honestly missed that so badly.
I honestly missed that too. When you played it, you know, I was ready to give you all the captured amber and go to time and figure it out from there, but yeah, we realized that.
So you were genius on like subconscious genius and conscious genius.
Yeah, I knew by putting them down there. Yeah, I think I just forgot that you were going to have to flip to draw into them anyways. But yeah, that was kind of a cool game plan that I had, and it ended up working out. But
it was great. Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, your deck was pretty frightening though. So did you end up scanning all the ears in and stuff and piecing it together?
I scanned it that morning because I forgot that I didn't have anything, literally anything to work from the whole day. So because I had some time between when I was going to like, we were there and we weren't going to play for a little while. So I asked G if I could like quickly scan in just so I could see them even in the Master Vault, like DOK aside. I wanted to, because I, unlike you, wasn't playing in all of the events.
Well, that's funny because it was the third of, was that the final event for Sunday, right? I think it was. So I had not looked at my deck since I think Friday.
Oh my
And when we got there and we were like shuffling and looking at our hands, I think we both looked at each other. I'm like, I don't even know what I'm looking for. Like I forget what I'm playing here because it's not an Archon deck you've seen a dozen or 50, 100 times. But yeah, so it took me a while in our game just to kind of get into the groove of it again. But
totally. Yeah. Well, I'm glad I was a good warm-up game.
Yeah, no, it was made me sweat for sure. As did my top four matchup, which was a rematch against Sunday.
Ooh.
So he was my one loss, like we talked about, and you know, I was I didn't want to have to go against his beanstalk right after your beanstalk, but I did. This time was kind of a polar opposite experience. I don't think he ever really found his beanstalk, maybe.
Sure.
And he kept putting out the belligerent guards, and I kept bouncing them again this time. But this time I was drawing into more of the houses that I was going to go into. So
nice.
It was pretty smooth sailing, I think, for the most part. So that felt good to get some revenge for that one loss. But then my final was against Mammon DG. He's a local out of Philly, and I actually met him at the first KFC. So I've known him for, you know,
a couple of years
at this point. And he's a really nice guy. And we'd never actually played each other in person, so it was fun. I'll start by saying it was probably the most fun I've ever had with IRL Keyforge, the best of three. Both of our decks were, I would say, on like a level playing field, although his I think was a straight Archon deck, so he left with a much better deck. But
fire.
But yeah, we did the best of three, and it went down to game three. Just one note on game one, that was the one that I dropped, and it was really close back and forth. The game winning play for him though was I have Iron Obelisk, and he stole it with either Animating Force or Spontaneous Awakening. I was at check, I think, for six final key, and he was right on the cusp as well. And he was able to steal that, and then like the next turn he went Brobnar and burst it up. I think he had a Smith that burst him up, and he scrapped Ornar Skullface to deal three damage to one of his own Brobnar guys and make my key seven instead of six, which was enough for him to win. So
wow.
It was a cool play. I'm like, well, now I'm probably not going to be playing Iron Obelisk the next couple games now that I know he has that. So,
oh my gosh. So what are you, sealed best of three, the first game you go into is going to be so different than the next game or the third game because you don't know the deck, but like second and third game you do. How is it different for you going into the first game versus going into the second and third game?
Yeah. Like you said, I feel like I should have been paying more attention to everything in his deck, but I definitely knew a lot of key pieces. So yeah, like you said, I think game one was fairly close to going to time, but the games two and three were a lot faster because we knew each other's decks and things like that. So game two, yeah, the main takeaway was to not play Iron Obelisk, I think, but he also had a talent scout that he got to play repeatedly with BR Geist. And I think he booed me and BR Geisted me several times too. So he definitely had some cool tricks up his sleeve as well. So I knew there was things to look out for, but
especially with overlapping houses, like those are creatures he can use.
Yeah. So we both had Brobnar and Geist, so he had Equidon with some generous offers and some, you know, good steal and stuff. So, yeah, game two, I ended up winning. I think he scooped a little early because he had a flight to catch. So we were trying to go fast so he could make that.
Oh my gosh.
And game three was, you know, winner take all. And I'll jump to the final play of that, which was also pretty memorable. I was nearing the end of my deck and we were both, you know, right at check for third key, very close to pulling it out. It could have gone either way. And I had Memorialize in my hand, as well as some Brobnar creatures. So I made the play to put out a Crim Torch Tooth and Heavyweight Morrick, I think, and not do a whole lot on my turn besides get to exactly enough cards to draw where I get to flip my deck.
Smart.
So I held the Memorialize and was able to play, I think I had a Smith maybe too, or maybe I drew into that. But the coming back to me, he was at check for his final key, and I was able to use Crim Torch Tooth to fight and kill three of his Equidon creatures all at once.
Wow.
And they each had Amber on them. And then he had scrapped one creature during his past turn, so he ended up having four cards in his discard pile, four creatures. And I memorialized him from nine down to five.
Epic! One off!
Yeah, and I got exactly to six, I think. And he had a massive turn after that. But he was trying to find a creature to like be our guys, but my discard was so low earlier in the games. He had stolen my Albia Strays. I think I had two of those. He kept stealing those and capturing. Yeah. 'Cause they would come in ready. So, luckily didn't run into that, but Yeah, we had just a ton of fun banter during the games, along with G, who is the head judge. We just we both had Infiltrators in our deck, which is a card that I'm not a fan of at all, and I just don't like playing them. So I kept using Nightmare Inducer to put it at the bottom of his deck, and we just kept trying to give each other our Infiltrators back or things like that. So it was fun. He was extremely kind and nice to play with, and yeah,
that's awesome.
Happy to share the final table and have the stream there as some history for the game.
So how did it feel like having walked away being a winner? Like, this is what you came for, but not even sealed. Like, sealed was not what you were expecting.
I'm more of an Archon player. I've always liked finding what I think are some of the best decks out there and kind of mastering them, but sealed is always fun. My luck is usually not great, so I never go into sealed expecting to win, but no, it felt great. Everyone, you know, was kind of huddled around the final table, and you know, just everyone was so kind afterwards and during the game. So it's always been my goal and dream of playing KeyForge since the beginning to win one of these. So the fact that it happened was pretty exciting. So
that's awesome. Oh my gosh. Well, that's fantastic. And what's crazy, absolutely insane, is that we have like a whole second storyline for you. Like, you had a whole second journey in the same weekend, overlapping, like not even like we just did this all of sealed, but intermingled within the sealed was also not only, I mean, we're not going to talk much about Archon because that would be a 3-hour episode, but you also top eighted in Archon and Alliance. So why don't we'll start your Alliance journey, but we may do this maybe a little bit. No, you know what? No, we're going to give you your due. We're going to talk about this as much as you want.
Let me talk about Archon just for a quick moment.
Yeah.
I'll be faster on both of these, I promise.
Love it.
Archon, like I said, is my favorite typically. And I went in with three decks that I was debating on using. One of them was Symbol, which is my Legionary Trainer Scholar deck that got second at Worlds, piloted by a local.
Right. A lot of people know that deck by name.
Yeah, which is cool. I've always wanted that. I'm like, there's Pink Frauds and stuff out there. There's Becky. Right? I'm like, it'd be cool to have like people actually know your deck name. So that was one that I wanted to have someone play. And luckily, Miguel played it and did quite well with it. And then my other two were both Grim Reminders. The one that I ended up going with was Rich Harley Quinn Victory, which at the time was the highest or the second highest SAS deck in the world that I recently acquired. So
insane.
I ended up wanting to, honestly, it could be overrated. There's a lot going on. There's 16 discard pips. It's pretty difficult to play. I've played it close to 100 times online, and it just takes some getting used to, especially in person, because you're discarding a lot of the best cards.
I'm super curious. Like, what makes it difficult? Like, what is it, the choices you have to make, or is it how far in the future you have to see your turns or the decisions you have to make? Like, what makes it difficult?
Yeah, a little bit of all of that. But yeah, like, you're discarding cards of your active house a lot of time. Like, just because there's, like, I don't know, like, each house has six or so discard pips, and
that's crazy.
It can just make your mind spin a bit. Definitely something that I hadn't really experienced with the game prior to getting that deck, but I wanted to give it a whirl. So the other deck was my son's name deck, which is probably the most special deck I'll ever own. It's Isaac Bean Watson, who parts animals, and you know, I really wanted to play it, and we got to talking, Sydney, since we got to play all three events, and you were gracious enough to give it a go.
I was gracious, sir. You were the one who honored me by letting me play it. And not only did it get me into all the way to the play-in game, but it was a beautiful deck. Like, talk about it's how do I say this in a complimentary way? It was like, it was easy to play. I guess like it was also my play style. It had Brobnar in it. It was such a good deck, but it was also so like wonderfully easy to grasp. It was lovely.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. When I like to open all my decks blind sealed, I guess. So I open them up and I don't look at the list and I flip card by card. So I did the same thing with his deck and my other name decks. None of them have ever been good. And this one, I'm just flipping card by card. I'm like, I think this might be the best deck I've ever opened, and it definitely is. So the fact that it has his name on it, I'm so happy about that. But it was, you playing that was one of the highlights of the weekend, without a doubt. It's up there. It's up there with me winning these couple that I was able to do. But like just having you play it and enjoy it and things like that, I'm very happy for that. So thank you.
Thank you.
It was a highlight for me too. Like hearing about it and then like hearing you tell me all about Isaac and that Isaac had been opening decks with you since he was one.
Since he was like 1 year. Yeah, he'll be 5 this summer. He's 4, but yeah, he's been opening decks right since he was 1. Like now he knows, like he doesn't play obviously, but he knows like which houses I like in each of the sets and stuff like that. So he picked those houses for his deck and it just happened to work out really well. So
that's amazing.
But I guess for the Archon event, I'll just kind of quickly run through. I ended up going undefeated for day one. Along the way, I had to play Magic Duck, another member of Repout. Got to share the table with Draz Kor in round 3, which is always fun. I love Draz. Oh,
he's awesome.
Yeah. And he played very well. I'll just touch on one move that he did that I thought was one of the cooler things. Early in the game, I was just kind of getting my footing, didn't have much of a board, and he had kind of burst out with a Brobner and Mars board.
Ooh.
And I had Winds of Death in my hand. I was just ready to go. He wasn't going to get to archive anything. But what he did was he kaboomed his whole board and got like 3 or 4 Mars creatures in his archive and 2 or 3 Brobnar guys in his discard. And he like debated on it for a while, but he ended up pulling the trigger. And I'm like, told him afterwards, I'm like, that move like set me back substantially. And I think changed the trajectory of the game. So hats off to him for that move. Like no one really would think to blow up their own board pretty much, but that was definitely the right thing to do. Then my last game for the first day was against Miguel, my local, with Symbol. We had to play each other. He'd already lost once, and I was undefeated, so I knew if I beat him, he'd be knocked out. So
got paired down, and he got paired up. Oh,
yeah. So it was very bittersweet because I wanted him to make day 2 as well. But real quick on that, he got way ahead. He got a fast start, and he ended up doing triple fresh marks on 3 of my guys.
Whoa.
So I had like 9 amber on my 3 creatures. I'm like, this it might be over. But no,
in addition to the 3 amber he made with the fresh mark.
Right.
Yeah, no, I'm like, this was frightening. But I'd been trying to set up the coolest combo that my deck has, and that's a strong feeling with a capture pip on it plus Echo Fly.
Oh.
So you can rule of 6 a strong feeling by continually returning it with Echo Fly by capturing one onto Echo Fly, which readies it, and it moves one from each creature to the common pool. So at the end of that next turn, I was able to wipe off all 9 amber that he had on my creatures.
Wow.
plus 6 more that went onto Echo Fly. So I think I wiped out 15 amber that one turn.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So, and it's funny because we had played at a store championship, so he had seen that before. And it came out. It was cool to do, but I wish it wasn't against him. So
right.
So that was day 1, and then just real quick on the top 8, I played Zinzi, also known as, I think, Longing Yuriko. And he was playing his name deck, which was cool. It was actually one that I had scoped out on DOK and was interested in buying, but then I realized it was his name deck, so I didn't try that. But it also was Winds of Death, Key Abduction, Shenanigans, and he pulled the trigger on doing Winds of Death after I had a bigger discard pile, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to Key Abduct, I think, once, but then the second time, for the last key, I was 1 short and had to kind of go a different route, but was able to pull that off and move to the top 4, where I met Ewok, who was running your deck, Sydney, right?
Yep.
Stokeways. It honestly was going pretty well. He got out pretty quick with some Equidon stealing, I think, in the Mars Burst.
Oh, my gosh. It's ridiculous.
But I was able to Winds of Death and get like 10-plus cards in my archive, and I was just waiting for my Key Abduction to come. And we get down to the end, and I pulled my archive, and I could have gone a couple different routes, but I chose to try to UFO into the Key Abduction.
Ooh.
And actually, Hypnotic Command and Key Abduction were 2 of my 3
last
options.
Last cards?
Yeah, they were the bottom two cards of my deck.
Wow.
You're kidding me.
No, and so I had a terrible teammates was the other Mars card in my...
Ew, what like a letdown if you're looking for either of the other two cards and you get terrible teammates.
Yeah, so that's what I got. I had a capture pip on it, but it wasn't enough. He ended up ecto charging, but looking back, I probably should have gone unfathomable because I had a couple Tangy Mangies and a Cobra Seema. I could have drawn out the game longer, but you know, I was trying to just go for the winning play, and it didn't happen. So UI got to play June instead of me, which was enjoyable for him, I'm sure.
That was June's plan all along.
It was. So. It was preordained.
It was cool that you guys
got put key abduction on the bottom. That was me.
No, I was hoping that we might get a chance to play because we had played, June and I had played earlier in the week on TCO. We played two games with this exact matchup. And I won one and she won one.
God. What an amazing best of three.
I think it would have been cool. Maybe it'll happen some other time, but yeah. that was the end of my Archon run.
Well, one thing about Snowquakes, I don't think we ever touched on this. All three of us are on Reapout now, and we have we were doing a little internal Grim Reminders test, and Snowquakes is kind of the deck that inoculated you into Grim Reminders, Sydney.
It was one of the earliest ones I opened because when I joined, Sith had already set up the tournament. And so I basically was like, oh my gosh, I have to pick a couple decks right now.
Well, maybe Rich, my deck will meet you in the playoffs or something. We'll see.
One more thing before we leave Archon. Actually, Vargas, you're the one who seeded the idea of joining Reapout for back of Roseville last year when we met. We met and we just got to talking and you're like, yeah, I joined Reapout recently. I was like, oh, that's cool. Maybe I'll join. And you're like, you were taken aback for a second because you hadn't really met my kind of, this is how I am.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, maybe I win a Vault Tour. We'll see. And I was like, okay.
That next day. I don't remember saying you had to win a Vault Tour because I had never done that.
You didn't say I had to. You were just like, oh, you know, maybe. Because I was, it was this morning.
I'm sure that helps. I'm sure that helps. But yeah, no. then you went ahead and did that the next day, probably. So
I think it was the morning of top eight.
Okay.
You knew I was in. I think I did come over and talk to you because you were cut. It sucked. But I came over to talk to you and you're like, yeah, good luck. And I was like, yeah, I think I can. maybe I'll win the Vault Tour and look at that.
You're pretty good at predicting the future.
That's true. That is accurate statement.
Future self.
Literally my job.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, you took all your shots. So you want to move to Alliance real quick?
Yes, let's do it. All let's right. do it. Alliance, Rocket.
Friday night.
Oh, yeah.
Friday night.
Friday.
So after sealed, the first round sealed, Sydney got to go out and have some extra fun on the town. And while the rest of Reapout was doing practice games in the breakfast room.
Who practices? Come on.
Well, apparently it paid off because initially I was going to play Gorlami's Quad Merkins deck and with actually one of my pods that I had got for. So just set back a little bit. I've always liked the idea of Alliance and I've acquired some pods over the last year or two, but never really practice much of it or things like that. So, but Gorlami had reached out about one of my pods. It has a three exhumes and Restoring Guntis and some other Hysteria and some other good pieces and discs. So, I brought that with me and put it together with his Merkins build and proceeded to play June in a couple practice games against her. Make it woe.
No wins.
Yeah, and it was not a very fun experience. I'm like, I don't know. It just wasn't generating as much amber as I would have liked, I guess, in the couple games that I played. It might have just been those few games, but I ended up opting to switch.
Wait. Gotta ask. So yeah. as a multi-Merkins situation, not only the number you have, but you're exhuming them and you're shuffling through and drawing them again. How often do you pick Archives over playing it from the top of their deck?
Well, against June, I don't get to play any cards.
It's true.
She had the Uthbert device out and Befuddle. I played one turn and then I didn't play again for five more turns. I'm like, so I probably wouldn't have liked playing anything against her, to be honest. But unfortunate for the Merkins deck. It was that, that's what I was using. So I'm like, I want to do something else tomorrow. So I ended up I ended up swapping to Gorlami's other build from, this one's from Mass Mutation, as Double Eaton's Jar, which I've always Gorlami just been a massive.
Didn't think was that good. He was like, yeah, it's funny. Just, I brought it.
Yeah, he always, I think, has it on him because it's funny. I've got a little story because my family, we went to San Diego last summer for a vacation, and this was before I was in Repout, so I had been messaging Gorlami, and we actually met up at a brewery and talked to Keyforge and stuff, and I think that's right when he had just acquired his Sanctum Eaton's Jar from, I think, Italy or Portugal or something. So he had that on him, and we were looking through. I'm like, man, that is so cool. Little did I know I'd be playing it, you know, a year later as my first ever Alliance, you know, tournament. So it's a really cool build that I'll just kind of quickly run through a few highlights. It's Sanctum, Dis, and Logos. Logos just has extreme efficiency with 3 Eclectic Inquiry, 2 Lethalogica, and Auto Encoder, kind of the main pieces. So
yeah,
incredible stuff. I think that one is actually Flaming Hobos. Pod, and then the other two, the Dis has Eaton's Jar, 2 Infernus, 2 Gateway, so just a lot of purging and board wiping and kind of disruption with the jars and a Mark of Dis, I think. So, and then lastly, the Sanctum was had the Maverick Eaton's Jar, which there's only 13 in Mass Mutation, and I think it's the best one that's out there from what I've seen. It has 3 Bring Lows, which is pretty awesome for just stalling out a game if they don't have key cheats. So
sure.
It buys you a lot of turns, as I found out. But yeah, those are the kind of the main pieces. So I went in, and I had never played a game with it until the actual event, because the night before we were practicing other stuff. So
no, I think we did run. I thought we ran 2 games with it, and you went 1-1, and you're like, I'm sold.
I think that was the Merkins one. I think I was just ready to go to bed after that. I think I did win one with the Merkins build, but I felt like I got lucky. I'm like, yeah, this isn't gonna happen again. So but anyways, yeah, so
you hadn't actually played that deck in its form that it was in until you started the Alliance tournament?
I don't think so. And 2 of the pods are in a different language, so I'm like trying to refresh myself on what
the art.
Yeah, I know I'm a big fan of the art, so I feel like I knew most of them, but I needed to be to the point where I could kind of read the card text for what it was to my opponent if needed. But
that's true, sure. Just the magic. The magic for you is sealed Alliance. The magic for you is playing an Alliance deck you've never played before in the Vault Tour.
I will say I do pride myself on playing a lot of decks. I play like my favorite decks a lot, but I was looking at TCO earlier today just to see how many decks I've played, and I have almost 100 pages of decks, which would be like 1,000 decks that I've played.
Crazy. That's insane.
Delete some, man.
What's that?
Delete some, you maniac.
You never know when you're going to want to go back in time and find. I just like kind of like having the history of how my record has been with them, even though it doesn't really matter. But
I love it.
The memories. I delete stuff every day.
Well, if you don't like that, you wouldn't like my Gmail where I have like 80,000 unread emails or something stupid.
God. That was painful to hear.
I probably shouldn't be admitting that, but. I've had an account since I was like in middle school, and I did, you know, everything you sign up for, I just never stopped. I just like know what to look for in my email.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. But, so you know that, like, you can tell the difference between an Alliance player and an Archon player. And the Archon players don't delete things from TCO, because the Alliance players, when you start an Alliance game on TCO, you cannot sort and filter. Because the Alliances don't show up. You have to literally like go to the right page, or you like make it so that it's 50 long, and you know how many pages in you have to go at 50 long to get to the Alliance you want to play. Like, that's the difference between an Archon and an Alliance player.
We're second-class citizens. The stepchildren of Keyforge.
Yeah, I definitely know what you're talking about. Nah, just kidding, I don't. But I've built like maybe 5 to 10 Alliances in TCO, if that tells you anything. But
oh my gosh, that's amazing.
But yeah, so I can just kind of run through these pretty quickly. My Alliance, I think I started off with Magic Duck again, so I played him twice, which I ended up winning both, which is unfortunate since he's part of Repout as well. But
yeah,
we had a nice game, and then I played Miguel again, which he was running Symbol but a juiced up version
Nice.
For Alliance. I was able to, he had two Temoti the Damned and two Fathom Reavers, and I was able to jar his Temoti, which I think won me the game because he did get out fairly quickly in that one as well. So, round three, I played Sundi again. So I've played him three times now. And
wow.
On my build.
He was running June, your build, right? Yeah. So he had Bandolas Untamed with, you know, a really great guy. So with a couple Winds of Death and then a couple Key Abductions in Mars.
Oh my
so
gosh.
It was gross looking at the list. I'm like, why did you do this to me, June? I saw you like training him up on the deck beforehand. And I was like trying to scope it out. He's like, don't watch this. You're not. I'm like, I might go up against it. So he again was my one loss in the regular rounds.
Go Sundi.
But I learned a lot in that game. I used my first jar to ban Witch Queen, which later on I'll talk about. I did some more planning ahead of day two for this, but I banned Witch Queen. I think that was probably the wrong choice based on how it went. So. I did feel okay, though, because you said no one had forged a key on him, and I got, I think, two that game. So I knew it could be close. I just needed to maybe go about it a different way. So at that point, I was 2-1, and I went up against a Jenka deck. I forget the gentleman's name who I played against, but it was kind of funny because he had never seen Eaton's Jar before.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm like, well, this isn't going to be fun for you.
But. Oh.
So I played it, and I named Key Abduction. And he was like, ready to play Key Abduction. He's like, well, what am I supposed to do with him? I'm like, well, you can hang on to him or you can discard him. Because he didn't have any artifact control. So
oh.
I felt kind of bad, but I'm like, yeah, I've got another one of those jars coming. So.
Oh. Well, that's nice of you to heads up.
Yeah. So ended up going 3-1 and then getting to make into the top eight. Based off of that, so
I'm curious. Over the course of your day one for your Eaton's Jar, like that control is always it's not necessarily my playstyle because the literal level of decisions you have to make. You have to consider a whole deck list, 36 cards. You also have to consider what's already been played, and then for that alliance, the one that you played, you also have to consider a second Eaton's Jar, and the fact that. Like banning a card first versus second, how that possibly could affect your game. Like how brain burning was it? Like what went into the decisions that you made on what to jar?
Yeah, it's, I think all the play experience I've had with so many decks, you know, came into play a bit and just kind of, I feel like I can look at a list of cards and kind of know what the general game plan is for the opponent. And like you said, knowing what's already come out and if they can recur that or not, you still might need to hit it. So with two of them, talking to Goralami as it's his build, a lot of the time he says you hit their artifact control if they have artifact control.
Oh.
And then you use the second jar for what you need it for, you know.
Yes,
but typically I tried to just go a little bit risky and I went straight for whatever I thought would hurt me or make me lose the fastest. So it worked out in most games. So,
did you want to see them earlier? And obviously, you don't want to see them too late. But if you see them early, they do risk getting hit by artifact control.
Yeah, I was looking for them as early as I can. Basically, my opening hands, I was looking for, you know, great logos, some archiving with Eclectic Inquiries, getting Auto Encoder out early, things like that, or getting the jars were kind of the, I would consider those the starting hands I was after. So
interesting, cool.
Yeah, so. That was day one, top eight. I met you
yep.
in top eight, playing your amazing Jenka build that I've been iterating on for years. I don't even know how long, but it's been a while. And it's funny because Goralami told me I have like next to no chance of beating you. So I'm like, oh, thanks.
That's hilarious. Oh my God, that's amazing. And it's funny specifically coming from him because I borrowed his Logos deck. So like, not only did he know what I was bringing, but he provided you your deck. Like, that's hilarious.
Yeah, so he had a lot of stake in that match. So he was kind of hovering around us watching a bit. And I remember that game pretty well because you did not get a good start, I know, and you ended up having to do your Martian Generosity like turn two or three pretty early and didn't get to draw nearly as much as you wanted or get the the key abductions off. So I was able to purge your Marsh of Generosity with an Infernus and then get to Jar. I think I jarred your Helper bots or Nature's Call or something. But yeah, I was lucky. You never got your Disdain at the right time. I know you pulled. You did. I listened to you on the last cast talk about how you had pulled that in, which with all the archiving from Autoencoder and the Eclectic Inquiries, there was definitely some fear that you were going to time that at a bad time for me. So
I was actually looking forward to our matchup because I knew how heavy, especially because over the course of the weekend, I was expecting more archiving than there was. And your deck had, from just visualizing it, had more archiving than probably many other decks that I had seen that whole weekend. Other than Winds of Death, like, for some reason, people just, they didn't go in the archiving direction. And so I am rethinking Dissania in my Alliance pod or deck going forward.
Yeah, no. I've gone against some Dissania decks recently on TCO, and those are some of the losses that I've had, you know, with my Winds of Death key abduction stuff. So
totally,
I definitely think it was a good meta call. I think you're just unfortunate that you either didn't go against those decks or you didn't have it come out at the right time. So
sure.
So yeah, that was a surprise, I think, to Gorlami that I was able to pull it out in as a dominating fashion as it was pretty one-sided, which I think if we play that more times, it would not nearly go that way for me. So
at least it was easy breezy, just decided quickly.
Sydney, your deck has like zero Ambergold, right?
Yes, it has. Well, actually, what's funny is the pod that Gorlami gave me has less Amber control. I have Cutthroat Research in my normal Logos pod, and I had literally one card in the whole deck that is Amber control, and that's Mars Needs Amber, and that's it. Other than that, I am going to get, I'm trying to get three keys by turn three. That is the strategy of that Alliance deck.
In Gorlami's deck, you haven't mentioned this, has 20 Amber?
Yeah, it was
a lot.
When I streamed finals, I saw you multiple times generate 5 to 7 Amber turn.
I think one of the games I went from zero to check. I think it was turn one of the game with Disc, because it has a Ritual of Tognaw with the three, and then it has a Implosion with a bonus on another extra one. So I think I just played three cards and got 16. It was just kind of stupid, but I took down you, Sydney. I didn't want to play you again in the top eight, but we met, and then I met my good friend Sunday with another rematch, also in the top four, just Battle like in Sealed Mats. Alliance. So he beat me both in the opening rounds, and then I was able to beat him in both of the knockout rounds, which felt good for me. But it was, you know, it was unfortunate that I played like the same people over and over again. But what was kind of noteworthy about that rematch was you guys threw that amazing party on Saturday night, which was a blast. I was able to go for I think an hour or two.
Oh, but good. I'm so glad.
Yeah, I dipped out.
You know, get your rest, having to play so many games on Sunday.
Yeah, no, I did, and I convinced Gorlami and Liquid Squash, two other repout guys, to talk strategy with me going into day two. And we went card by card through your
that's
line,
amazing.
June, and because he has obviously more experience, but I was pretty confident I made the wrong jar call on earlier that day. So we went card by card. I'm like, what cards should I Infernus? Which cards should I jar? Like, kind of went by one by one, and I think we had settled that I needed to do Reclaimed by Nature first to get rid of the artifact control. But in the moment, I'm like, sorry guys, I'm going against that. And I went for Winds of Death because really the Winds of Death enables both the key abduction site as well as all the Witch Queen shenanigans. So I think he ended up having a Boo and a Winds of Death pretty early in that rematch, and I just got down the jar to stop the Winds of Death. So yeah, it went in my favor from that point on and moved on to the final. So
epic.
So then I guess real quick, the final was against Captain Crispy, another guy from San Diego, and he had, I believe, knocked me out from the Last Chance qualifier last year. So I'd played him once before. And I know, June, you got to commentate these games with Jeremy, which I got to watch back, and it was pretty fun to listen to you guys. But really, they're fairly one-sided, I would say, because both of them I got super hot draws. I can't recall if they were both Logos, but I think maybe one was the disc that we talked about where I burst way up and got a key, like, turn one, basically.
Sure.
The other one I got like two Eclectics, a Lethalogica into Auto Encoder like turn one. So I think I had like six cards archived or something.
Oh my gosh.
So it was, I was basically like, if I lose this, that's pretty bad. Like, this is like ideal right now. So I knew he had some crazy Mars combos with the Dr. Xylox Frex and Iron of Trouble. So I was able to Infernus some of those key pieces out and jar the others and take both of those games. So I got that win as well.
So I think you Infernus both Dr. Xylos, and I was commentating. I was just like, I actually don't know what Logan can do from this point. I was like, game's kind of over.
It kind of felt like that when I got that to work out. But going into the match, he felt pretty confident with the matchup because I think he had played Gorlami in a store championship final with the same exact matchup. So he had insight onto what I was playing, and I didn't really have much insight into his. I was trying to get some bits and pieces from them before we sat down for the final table. But yeah, I think, like I said, just the draws were more in my favor, and that's kind of how it went. So,
strategy question. For your multiple bring lows, are you more likely to like spread the amber out across multiple creatures, or are you putting them on creatures you don't think he wants to kill or that you don't plan on leaving the board anytime soon?
To be honest, I don't have many creatures out most of the game. I was usually discarding them with the auto encoder, so pretty much needed to ensure that I had a sanctum creature to go along with the bring lows.
A creature.
It didn't really matter, but... Yeah, so that was, I just kind of stack it all up. It's mainly a stalling kind of tactic, and I can burst up with the free markets and things like that. So
cool. Well, that was an absolutely incredible journey that you just took us on. Like, anyone listening, can you imagine, like, being in his shoes, playing all three of those events in one weekend, winning two of them, making top eight for all three of them, like, and having all three of those high level decks. Like, can you imagine, like, Eaton's Jar, the amount of play, like the high level thinking that has to go into that, and then Sealed Alliance, the fact that you don't know what your opponent is playing and having to think of a whole card pool while you're making your decisions, like all of that together, the accolades you deserve for what you achieved that weekend is absolutely ridiculous.
Thank you. Yeah, it was funny. I'll tell this real quick. Yesterday, I was watching some of the streams back just to refresh myself on the games, and Isaac was sitting down on his iPad. And he kept hearing Vargas. He's like, "That's you, Daddy." And then you guys kept saying it. He's like, "Can they stop saying Vargas? It's annoying me."
Isaac, I'm sorry.
And I'm like, you know what, Isaac? Your next name deck for Amber Skies is going to be Isaac Vargas Jr.
Oh my god!
So maybe I'll have to do that, but
that's amazing.
It was pretty fun.
Vargas annoys me.
But yeah, I thought that was funny. But no, overall, just the experience was obviously incredible. Like I said, it's been my dream to make it that far out of a vault tour while the game is still going and healthy. So I was super happy that it happened for me, and I hope that it happens for others that are kind of in the same boat. So I've had my fair share of bad moments. You know, I was, June alluded to it, I was the first ever one loss and out with 2-0. So I got
right.
And then at last chance qualifier, I brought what I thought was my best deck at the time and still is one of my best ones. And I went 0-2 for that. So I know what it's like to be on the wrong end of things. So, yep.
So before we get into our titular segment, just a real quick, what future events can people see you at? What other in-person events will you be at?
So this year, most likely just Worlds from this point on. I mean, if you're in Kansas City, our community's dwindled a bit. We're trying to keep it up and running, but that's kind of where I'll probably be located for most of the year. I'll be watching the streams and the Discords from afar for the rest of the vaults, but I'll be at Worlds with the invites. And then,
any idea what you'll play?
I'm curious. Did they say that it's going to start on a Thursday?
I think so, because the Thursday is going to be event that the Vault Warrior thing that you now have an invite to. So yes.
Oh, it's an okay. I forgot. Yeah, I totally forgot about that being a thing. So now I was curious if. I was curious if the extra day was to allow people that qualified for multiple things to play in all of them.
I didn't.
Yeah, I hope so.
Unfortunately, no. You have to take both of your invites and only pick one of them.
See, I've never had an invite before, so I've never had this problem. No, I don't know. I don't know. I loved playing the double jar alliance, so maybe that. Like I said, my sealed luck usually isn't super great, but sealed is fun, so I don't know. It'll be a tough call.
Yeah, maybe you'll get to borrow one of mine.
Yeah.
So actually, I forgot. So one more thing I'm going to sneak in here. So having won two of them, and June, you can talk to this too. You both, at the tiers that you won, would have been in the money last season. This mm-hmm. season, the prizes include Vault Masters decks, as well as the Vault Warrior title, and the eventually to-be-owned TBD trophy that will be shipped to both of you in the future. What are your thoughts on that?
On the prizing as a whole, I'm pretty happy with it, to be honest. I was expecting the prize decks to be Grim Reminders, and obviously I think Grim Reminders is a better set probably overall from Vault Master 24, but I'm keeping most of it sealed for now, but I did open one display with Isaac and got a few cool things. It's got a couple Horseman decks, a Fagin and Urchin deck, so there's a lot of cool things for sure. I do wish they would have done like a special border on those decks. I do like the you know, the geotag location and stuff being on there, but it's funny that, you know, the money's no longer a thing, which it would have been nice, obviously, but I've loved Keyforge since the day it came out, you know, so like there wasn't money back when I was trying to win tournaments back then. So it's, I'm really happy with what GG has offered. I feel like they've thought things through pretty well, and it's definitely appreciated.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, comparing it to last year isn't really fair when it comes down to it. You know, like, I'm happy with what we've got. Any plans for your trophy, though?
Yeah, I'm just definitely smashing that. And yeah, I listened to you today. Maybe I'll have to make some amber out of it too, but that's your idea. So maybe you can start.
Hey, you're welcome to.
It's a really cool idea. So,
well, right now, you two are the only people in the world at this moment in time that have trophies to decide what to do with.
We're smashing all three, that's for sure.
Heck yeah. We're going to have a rebound smash party.
You two are the best.
I'm excited to see what it looks like, though, when it comes in. So,
yeah, you got to get a couple pictures before the smashing.
It's funny because I think this was well before I won anything. I was joking to Josh about your guys' episode and how you're talking about how you're going to smash things. And I'm like, yeah, Josh, are the trophies here? If I win one, I'm definitely smashing it. And he just like looked at me with like a blank stare. I'm like, oh man, he doesn't like that.
Amazing. Love it. That is perfect. And that is a great time that we cannot end an episode of Help from Future Self without our titular segment.
Help from Future Self.
I'm going to take this one today because I am totally stealing something you said and giving it to myself as advice. Because we chatted a little bit earlier in this conversation about you playing games on TCO. You have hundreds of pages of decks on TCO and how that has made you a better player. And it's like, since you said that, like, that has been in the back of my mind with me thinking that is absolutely something that makes you a better player. Exposure to a ton of decks, but not only what you are playing, but with that many games played with different decks against different decks, like literally the sheer volume of games that is prepares you for sealed in a way that no other like practice can, but also learning a new set. Like, I think one of the things that made it hard for me to accept this set was the mechanics weren't my playstyle, but the more I played it, the better it got for me and the more fun I was having. And I think if I had literally just pushed as hard as I don't know if I could ever push as hard as you do, but if I could have played more individual decks, more variety of decks on TCO, and even if I was just getting them out as fast as possible to try and get games in and learn what cards do, like, that also sticks in your memory more, actually experiencing it yourself instead of just reading through cards on Archon Arcana or something. But I'm totally stealing that from you.
Yeah, no, I definitely spend way too much time when a new set comes out analyzing you know, pretty much all the cards. I give them my own ratings and things like that. And then
nice.
the amount of time I search on DOK for decks that I want to maybe buy off somebody, see if they're interested in selling or trading.
Are we going to get like a Vargast rating system?
I do have my own for Grim Reminders and Woe. I started with Woe, and that's actually how I found Symbol and I found Rich. So I found like my best decks.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing.
But I will say all just like analyzing decks on DOK and like learning what every card is does prepare you really well for sealed, definitely. And just kind of knowing pretty much any situation that can come up, how to maneuver and make the best of it. So,
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
You're like my polar opposite. You win with 1,000 decks. I win 1,000 games.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's why I'm the Archon champ and you're the Sealed champ.
Well, so that's why we have the two winners right here. It's the 1,000 games, however you spread it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, the reps definitely help however you get them, whether it's with one deck or many, I think. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I have been in the presence of greatness for over an hour and a half at this point. So I think I am going to let you two go to sleep and we can finally end this episode. We are on Discord and Patreon. Links are in the show notes. You can find me on TCO and Discord as SC Steel. June, where can people find you?
June on Discord, Future Self, TCO. We rep in Alliance.
Woo! All right, Matt, where can people find you?
I'm Vargast. Yeah, I'm Vargast on Discord, TCO. Yeah, I'm pretty much in all the Discords, so hope to see you guys online. And I do want to say I appreciate all the people that have reached out and congratulated me. We've got a special community without a doubt, and I'm happy to be a part of it.
You are now a historic part of it, sir. And for those of you listening, if you haven't yet, back the game found. We'll be chatting about it for the next 2 weeks. And we will be back next week with another episode of Help from Future Self. Until then, stay forging.